Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
That's just a reflection of kind of what ultimately came out of his podcast. It was probably the beginning of, wow, this guy seems off.
A former employee of the governor's office gave a speech airing his extremist views that had not been approved by the governor's office. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 16th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, without enough officers to cover shifts, Fairbanks police will change their patrol schedule.
So we really have 10 patrol officers for the city of Fairbanks right now.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy's advisor on family values aired his extreme views not just on his personal podcast, but also in a video recorded in his official role as an aide to Dunleavy. Jeremy Kubis resigned as Dunleavy's pro-family advisor last month after Alaska Public Media found that he had defended Hitler, used a racial slur against blacks, and downplayed rape on the podcast he co-hosted. While working for Dunleavy, Kubis also taped a speech on behalf of the governor, where he aired some of his polarizing views. He gave the address to the socially conservative group called the Alaska Family Council in May. His remarks targeted advocates for legal abortion.
To many of us, it's obvious. Don't kill your child in any stage of life. But at times, this simple message feels insurmountable to give as a seemingly demonically possessed pro-abortionist shouting, screaming, foaming from the mouth that they have the right to kill their own child.
The speech has not previously been made public. Alaska Public Media obtained a copy recently through a public records request. In the nearly 5-minute video, Kubis complained about what he called the insidious worship of the self, and he said the political left has been infiltrating the culture with its surreptitiously evil agenda for decades.
They come up with the most ridiculous arguments, not grounded on logic and reason, but on the primal urge that many throughout history have had, that is to sacrifice a child at the altar of their false idols.
The speech raised eyebrows among the staunch opponents of abortion in the audience. Jim Minery leads the Alaska Family Council. That's the group that Kubis was speaking to. He says there were rumblings about the charged language in the video.
That's certainly not anything that we've ever articulated or ever would. And so I think that that's just a reflection of kind of what ultimately came out of his podcast. And it was probably the beginning of, wow, this guy seems off.
The governor's office would not comment directly on the substance of the speech, but a spokesman says the video was not formally approved and did not go through the proper review process. The spokesman says the governor's office is not aware that anyone else saw the speech before it was shared with the Alaska Family Council. Kubis says he stands by the contentious remarks from the video about sacrificing children on the altar of false idols. He says the false idol is the self, part of what he calls America's self-centered society. Health insurance company Moda is suing a California addiction treatment center, claiming the center falsified Alaska patients' income in a scheme to overbill Moda by $3.3 million. Moda filed the suit Thursday in federal court in Alaska. It says employees of New Life Treatment Center in Southern California recruited Alaskans struggling with addiction and then either coached them to lie about their income on insurance enrollment forms or filled in the false information for them. According to the lawsuit, the patient's income was actually lower than what they claimed on the forms, and the patients should have been enrolled in free public health insurance like Medicaid. The lawsuit says a state regulation made Alaska patients especially lucrative targets. The regulation obligates private insurers to pay for services outside of Alaska and to pay more than the center's average rate. Moda says they were billed up to $9,000 a day per Alaska patient, some of whom were at New Life's facility for months. New Life did not respond today to a request for comment. a fiber optic cable break severed communications to big parts of rural Alaska early Sunday morning. The cable is owned by Alaska-based telecommunications company Quintillion, which is forecasting 2 months until the line is repaired. The cut is thought to have been caused by ice scouring, but Quintillion President Michael McHale says there are still some unknowns.
We know through electronic surveillance where the cut is. We just don't know the very specific details of the nature of the cut, you know, how deep it went. You know, was it, you know, a couple of meters wide? Was it 100 meters wide? We don't know that yet.
The fiber optic break is affecting most of northern Alaska as well as parts of western Alaska, with communities experiencing limited connectivity to broadband and cellular networks.
And we provide wholesale broadband services to TelAlaska, Alaska Communications, GCI, Aztec, and DRS, SES. So all kind of the major phone companies and cable companies.
McHale says that this was the first time in Quintillion's 7 years of operations that they have experienced a fiber break of this magnitude.
I mean, it's a natural disaster, a natural occurrence that, you know, we call an act of God. Ice scour is, where an iceberg interacts with the seabed floor and you know, can essentially destroy things in its path. And our fiber happened to be one of those.
McHale says Quintillion is using all of their resources to get a better understanding of the cut. He says that includes repair ships, skilled technicians, and equipment to access the damage. Once a repair ship makes it to the site near Prudhoe Bay, McHale says Quintillion might deploy divers and remote vehicles to gain access to both ends of the breakage. Then the cable will be raised out of the water and fixed on the ship.
You know, we have everybody focused on the repair. That's all we can control right now. The rest of it's kind of out of our hands, and we need to be smart, we need to be quick, we need to take action.
McHale says the 2 month estimated repair time is based on how quickly crews can get to the site, which is still blocked by ice. A worsening staffing shortage at the Fairbanks Police Department is forcing a scheduling change. There are not enough officers to cover all shifts. And as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the situation is driving tough choices and measures to boost hiring and retention.
The Fairbanks Police Department plans to reduce patrol hours beginning August 1st. FPD Chief Ron Dupuy says the department will no longer have patrol officers on duty between 8 a.m. and noon.
We're going to a 2 10-hour schedule for the patrol officers. So patrol officers will be here starting at noon, and then the second shift will come in at 10 p.m. and work till 8 a.m.
Chief Dupuy notes that there will always be a few officers at the police station, including himself, who can respond to emergencies during the non-patrol hours. He says the schedule change reflects critically low staffing.
This is the first time in my 18 years that we've been down this far.
He says of 44 budgeted FPD positions, only 29 are currently filled, and 13 of those are administrative.
Our patrol officers, the guys that actually are on the street working, we have 16, and 6 of those are on some other kind of assignment, whether they're on administrative duty, some kind of leave. So we really have 10 patrol officers for the city of Fairbanks right now.
They're just running ragged.
FPD Captain Nathan Warner points to a down spiraling effect caused by patrol burnout and limited opportunity to pursue specialized police work like canine, narcotics, or SWAT programs. Warner says benefit the community and police officers.
It creates a quality of life and a progression for a career, so you end up retaining employees.
Captain Warner adds that FPD, like departments across the country, is competing for a dwindling pool of officer candidates. And the current patrol grind, along with less than competitive wages and benefits, has officers leaving faster than replacements can be hired and trained.
We're bleeding officers.
In an effort to turn around the situation, Captain Warner and Chief Dupuy have requested the city use funds budgeted for unfilled positions to attract and retain officers. Meeting Monday, the city council passed an ordinance that triples an existing hiring bonus for experienced officers from $20,000 to $60,000.
The highest lateral transfer bonus system in the state of Alaska.
City Mayor David Prus told the council the bonus, which is paid in 2 increments over 3 years, is warranted given the critically low staffing situation at FPD.
It's the most immediate fix for the issue.
The city council is considering two other measures aimed at boosting officer hire and retention. One would increase the base wage from $34 to $42 an hour. The other would put $10,000 a year into officer retirement accounts, money they could access after 13 years at FPD. It would augment the state's public employee retirement system, which in 2006 eliminated pensions for the latest tier of employees. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, skyrocketing property insurance rates have Alaska City scrambling.
I've been with APEI for more than 13 years, and the 30% rate increase we're seeing this year is the largest by a significant amount.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by SNAP.
A homelessness advocate with a checkered past who once accidentally floated from Alaska to Russia was shot to death yesterday. 32-year-old Ryan Dumler is charged with murder in the shooting of 51-year-old John Martin III. According to a charging document, surveillance video showed Dumler approach Martin, who was lying down in a parking lot. The footage showed Dumler apparently shooting Martin, then heading east to his job at a nearby Burger King. Police found Martin dead with multiple gunshot wounds, with 9mm shell casings near him. The video led them to the restaurant where Dumler was arrested yesterday. Investigators say they found a 9mm handgun and two ammo magazines in his backpack. In 2011, Martin sat outside Anchorage City Hall to protest the city's homelessness policies, prompting then-Mayor Dan Sullivan to propose banning people from sitting or lying on downtown sidewalks. Martin made national headlines in 2018 when he crossed the Bering Sea in a dinghy. Russian authorities detained him as he tried to reach China. Before all of that, Martin had served 8 years for sexual abuse of a foster child. In a separate incident, prosecutors tried him twice after a 2014 crash on the Seward Highway that killed his girlfriend, claiming he was driving drunk, but both juries failed to reach a verdict. Dumler is being held today at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. Many municipalities and schools in Alaska are facing record-high property insurance rates for the year ahead. As KFSK's Thomas Copeland reports, climate-driven catastrophes across the U.S. are driving up prices in Alaska.
Clerk, call the roll.
This was the moment it happened.
Bob.
Yes.
David.
Yes.
A last-second amendment to the Petersburg Borough's 2024 budget.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
The amendment passed unanimously after just about 2 minutes of discussion during last week's assembly meeting. An additional $50,000 for property insurance. Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht says it's the biggest rate increase he's ever seen.
We basically budgeted for a 10% increase. We ended up with over a 30% increase. It's the highest we've seen year over year, for sure. And we don't really know when it's going to end.
Petersburg schools are dealing with a similar problem. Their property insurance is likely to rise by more than 50% for the upcoming fiscal year. Like a lot of small and medium public entities in Alaska, Petersburg Borough and School District get their coverage through an insurance pool. Both belong to a pool called Alaska Public Entity Insurance, or APEI. Barbara Thurston is the director of APEI. Like Giesbrecht, she says this year's rates are an all-time career high.
I've been with APEI for more than 13 years, and the 30% rate increase we're seeing this year is the largest by a significant amount.
Thurston says that there are two main reasons for the record high rates of property insurance this year. The first is inflation, the cost of labor, materials, and fuel all going up. And the second reason, climate-driven catastrophes.
There's been some significant hurricanes, both in Florida and some other states, that caused a substantial amount of damage. There's been freezes in Texas, which are relatively unheard of, but were very expensive. And there's been a lot of wildfires.
Insurance pools like APEI buy their own reinsurance from national or global insurers like AIG or Lloyd's of London. As climate-driven disasters become more frequent across the US, the big insurers have to foot the bill. Dr. Rachel Cletus is the policy director at the Union of Concerned Scientists.
The rising insurance rates are a canary in a coal mine for climate change. What they're pointing out is many places are now becoming so highly exposed to climate risk that insurance is becoming unaffordable or unavailable.
In the past 5 years, insured losses from these catastrophes have averaged about $100 billion globally, and nearly three quarters of those losses occurred in North America. Cletus says that big insurers basically have two options: jack up their prices or abandon ship.
Recent news that State Farm and Allstate were going to stop offering new homeowner insurance policies in California are very much related to the increase in catastrophic wildfire seasons.
But according to Cletus, it's not just Californian homeowners who need to be worried.
Public entities also purchase insurance to protect the value of infrastructure, of major buildings, etc. And if insurance rates go up in these cases, ultimately it's the taxpayer that's on the hook for these higher rates.
And these catastrophes aren't some faraway problem for Alaskans. Landslides and flooding could be on the rise in Southeast. Aaron Jacobs is a hydrologist with NOAA.
We are seeing temperature and precipitation increase throughout these 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years on the climate record. And extreme precipitation are the triggering events that can increase risk for landslides and flooding.
Insurance companies are now looking to experts like Jacobs to help them predict future catastrophes. Last month, NOAA teamed up with the National Science Foundation to launch a new research center that will provide the insurance industry with climate change data. And back in Petersburg, borough manager Steve Giesbrecht says he wants to be prepared too.
I think this is a new era and the cost of property insurance. We're going to have to factor that in every year and take that into account when we set those numbers in our budget.
The fiscal year for Alaskan public entities like Petersburg Borough and School District kicks off on July 1st. But high rates of property insurance could last for years to come. In Petersburg, I'm Thomas Copeland.
An ambitious Anchorage Assembly goal to get a new permanent low-barrier shelter up and running this fall is becoming less ambitious. The Assembly's lead on homelessness issues now says a new shelter likely won't open until the end of December, well into the season for preventable frostbite and outdoor deaths, and it likely will need emergency authorization to start off. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports that even that version of a shelter is far from certain.
Turnout was thin at recent town halls on shelter concepts, and the Assembly and mayor have clashed over which options the city should pursue.
If history is in any indication, if we approve a plan that does not have community buy-in, I have no faith that this administration will implement it.
That was Assembly Housing and Homelessness Committee Chair Felix Rivera back in March. His new target for getting a permanent shelter running is December 31st, with a new caveat that it would likely be under temporary emergency authority.
There's realistically and feasibly no other way that a shelter would get up and running by the end of this year. Considering some of these processes, conditional use, rezoning can take months and months and months, right?
That was Monday. His comments came just 6 weeks after the Assembly began shutting down its winter emergency shelters, the biggest of which was the Sullivan Arena. Local experts say about 700 people in Anchorage are now unsheltered. Using the arena was controversial. When the city opened it as a mass shelter during the pandemic, and again last fall when outdoor temperatures fell, it acted quickly with emergency powers. The shelter operators didn't need to meet licensing requirements adopted in 2021, and the site didn't have to fit normal zoning and land use rules. The Sullivan Arena gave hundreds of people with nowhere else to go refuge, but it could be chaotic. Public safety issues were frequent, inside and out. Advocates say those conditions and neighborhood impacts are not inherent to permanent low-barrier shelters. Owen Hutchinson, a spokesperson for the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness, said what spills out into a neighborhood is a reflection of what's going on inside a shelter.
It's really a mirror. So if in a shelter things are really chaotic and unsafe, things will be chaotic and unsafe for those individuals outside the building.
He said in well-run shelters, the users do feel safe and secure. The problem is the Assembly, the mayor's office, and neighborhoods can't agree on where to put a shelter. Since 2021, at least three viable options have been sidelined. Rivera is trying again. He wants to get the public more involved to build wider support for a permanent shelter concept. He says it would be run with higher standards and better policies for minimizing neighborhood impacts than past emergency shelters. Earlier this month, Rivera hosted three town halls about what a new shelter should look like. There were lots of empty seats. East Anchorage resident Walter Listener was one of only about two dozen people across all three events who stepped up to the mic.
Look how many people are here. It's very discouraging. There's no reason there should be at least 200 people here. No reason. Out of 300,000 residents?
The people who did show up shared grievances and fears about homeless people, judgments about substance use and idleness. A few comments were focused on shelter concepts. In an interview this week, Rivera says he was also hoping for better turnout. This week, Rivera's committee finished a draft resolution with screening criteria for a new shelter. It includes things like square footage per user, proximity to public transportation, distance from schools and playgrounds. He plans for an assembly public hearing and vote on July 11th. Then he'll put together a list of specific locations for a potential shelter and hold another round of town halls leading up to a final assembly decision to pick a site. He expects better participation then. He thinks Anchorage at large does care enough to support solutions to homelessness.
I have to believe that. Even if it isn't true, I feel like me as an elected representative has the moral imperative to work in this issue despite all odds, despite any opposition, to try to find solutions.
He says for him, it comes down to preventing outdoor deaths in the winter. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com. If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience. Your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
A small cohort of Ukrainian refugees graduated from a new business training program in Anchorage this week. The program is a partnership between Catholic Social Services, which resettles refugees in Alaska, and Set Up Shop, a program that supports early-stage entrepreneurs from underserved communities. Emily Cohn directs communications for Set Up Shop and says in the case of this Ukrainian cohort, that meant tailoring the program to people who are new to Alaska but may already have decades of business experience.
When the war happened and they had to uproot their lives and move to Alaska, they have to start that business over from scratch. And now they're working under a new country with new systems for permitting, for credentials and the resources they need to start all over again.
Elena Kalisnik is one of the 11 program graduates. She's been doing manicures and pedicures for 25 years and just last week signed a lease to open her own salon business in Anchorage called Aesthetic Nails. Kalisnik says the setup shop training helped make that happen.
The biggest thing they were teaching how to advertise your business here in Alaska, how to find new clients, new customers, and how to do the bookkeeping and pay attention to the receipts and taxes and stuff like that.
Kalisnik says she markets on Instagram and Facebook and through word of mouth. She doesn't speak fluent English yet, so serves primarily Ukrainian women, but hopes to expand her business as her English improves. Other program participants have started businesses providing construction services or selling traditional Ukrainian baked goods. Catholic Social Services has resettled more than 600 Ukrainian refugees in Alaska since the start of the war last spring. This week marked the 125th anniversary of the Philippines' Declaration of Independence. That was when the island nation officially began a revolution from its colonizers. Festivities took place across the country, and this year, celebrations even took place in Kodiak. KMXT's Brian Venwa attended an event hosted by Kodiak's Filipino-American Association and has this report.
It was a bright and sunny Sunday as St. Mary's Parish, Kodiak's Catholic Church, dedicated a Mass to the archipelago's Filipino community. After Mass, a celebration was held in the church's community center across the parking lot. This is one of the first events Kodiak Filipino American Association has had in a while. Mark Anthony Viscocho is the association's president. The United States didn't officially recognize the Philippines until after World War II, but Viscocho says most Filipinos recognize the original declaration from June 12 back in 1898.
The first time that the Philippine flag was raised in Kawit, Cavite by the late President General Emilio Aguinaldo. I think that's the first time that we as the Filipino, we are free from bondage. We are free from slavery. We will not take this.
Some folks even wore traditional Filipino formal clothes for Sunday's celebration in Kodiak. Barongs are usually worn by men and look kind of like a Western button-up shirt. Pilipinas are usually worn by women and can look like a short jacket or similar to a shawl. Both are usually white or off-white and transparent, but worn with similar colored shirt or dress underneath. They're traditionally made from pineapple fibers and adorned with patterns near the collar and chest areas. Viscocho says he wants to hold more events like this to bring together the Filipino community and spread awareness about the association's efforts.
Let's bring it back online so that everyone sees that we are here and that, you know, we are proud of who we are and we want to share that celebration with everybody in the community. But yeah, this is just a start, just giving it back to the community.
The small room was lined with tables filled with foods like pancit, a rice noodle dish with chicken and vegetables, and caldereta, which is like a goat stew. There were also desserts like puto, a steamed rice cake. The room was filled to the brim, and attendees spoke in both English and Tagalog, which is the main dialect of the Philippines. Mayor Pat Branson also attended the celebration. The Kodiak City Council proclaimed June as Filipino Heritage Month at its meeting last week in honor of the Independence Day. She says it's important to acknowledge the historic presence of Filipinos on the island and the impact they've had over the years.
Filipino community has been here since the 1800s. A major part of our community, volunteering, working hard, and celebrating. The Philam Association knows how to celebrate with great food and laughter. You can hear that going on inside. So it's a joyous day.
Viscocho says they hope to host a basketball or volleyball tournament next year as well to get more young people involved.
Anything that we're trying to do to get the youth involved. That's one of our main projects too, is the youth.
The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will also proclaim June as Filipino Heritage Month in their meeting on Thursday. Viscocho says this past weekend's festivities are just the beginning and is already planning to host more events soon. Sa Kodiak, ako ay Brian Benoa.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Nat Hurst, Chris Clint, Jeremy Shea, and Michael Finelli in Anchorage, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Thomas Copeland in Petersburg, and Brian Venois in Kodiak. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer tonight is Dave Emmer, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.